The 2-2.
Got it. Jeff Hoffman comes in and strikes out the side to finish off a shutout win. Only the seventh time since the Giants came to San Francisco a long time ago that they had that many hits and did not score.
Ooh, hello there. That is not the kind of history you want to be making if you're the San Francisco Giants. Dave Fleming on the call there for NBC Sports Net Bay Area. Giants falling to the Blue Jays 4-0 last night.
I'm so upset.
Thank you, Nick in San Jose. I am also upset. Fun fact, Nick in San Jose, big Dodger fan. Who'd have thunk? But yeah, a rough one for the Giants last night. Sam Lumman here with the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap alongside my co-host Dan Devone. And Dan, 11 hits and no runs. You got to go back to August 24th of 1959, year two in San Francisco. Candlestick wasn't even open yet. They were playing at Seal Stadium that year. That's how far back you have to go to find a time when the Giants got 11 hits and zero runs. 0-9 with runners in scoring position last night. 7 left on base. Oh, and by the way, Justin Verlander got roughed up as well. If you're looking for a positive, though, Rafi Devers, yeah. 2 hits. All right, I'll take that. But no, that was, you know, the baseball second half, the post-All-Star break second half started last night, and someone clearly forgot to tell the Giants that.
You would think after 4 days off and knowing what this team has to do with everything that's in front of them that you would get a better performance than that. 1959, Willie Mays in center field, the last That's going back a ways, man. 11 hits.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know where you start because I know this isn't popular, but I still believe in this team. I know it's frustrating as hell. I can't explain it. I'm not about to defend them for the next 3 hours, but I do think that they can hit better than this. And if we're somehow trying to explain what's going on, it's beyond my bandwidth at this point.
Yeah, and I think it's, again, this team is still within playoff contention here. I believe they're still 6 games above 500 as I have the standings in front of me right now. They are 52-46, still 6 games out, a game and a half out of the wild card race behind the Padres. So this team's still very much in it, and we've still yet to see all their hitters hitting well at the same time. Some guys are heating up this month. Jung-Hoo Lee is quietly having a pretty solid month. He had another hit yesterday. Patrick Bailey, he had a 2-hit game yesterday. He's hitting 270 in the month of July. I'm kind of curious what's different about him this month. So you have some of the ancillary players are starting to do a little well this month. Willy Adames still hitting well, all things considered overall over the last month. Though he did go, I believe, he got 1-for-4 last night. That average is still pretty low, but that average is going to be low all year long just because of how terrible of a start he got to the season. When you look really closely, you can see reasons as to why you should still believe in this team that aren't crazy. But no one really cares about those reasons when you're getting 11 hits, zero runs, and falling flat on your face against a damn good Blue Jays team. I don't want to take anything away from the Toronto Blue Jays. There's a reason why they're in first place. They play the game very well. That 4-run rally they had last night, just single, single, double, single, double. Like, it was, that was some just very good, consistent contact hitting that the Blue Jays had last night. And I hate saying this, but gotta tip your cap to Chris Bassitt. Pitched a hell of a game last night. He got into the seventh inning there, goes 6 1/3. Did give up the 10 hits, but he was able to limit the damage. He got some big double plays when he needed to, got some big strikeouts when he needed to. And shout out to him, Brendan Little. He came in the seventh inning when with got things in trouble there. Had a couple guys on base. Gets 2 big strikeouts on Mike Yastrzemski and Elliot Ramos to end the threat in the seventh and strand Rafael Devers on deck. The Blue Jays just executed. On
Giants
a night
stranded
with
a runner last night?
They stranded 7 of them. It's insane, Dan. I don't understand how a team like the Giants, which they are a good team, not a great team, but think how much better they could be with just a smidge of better situational hitting. Because simply put, this offense is not good enough to just win games by outscoring other teams. This is a team that is built very much like those early 2010s teams. They're built on pitching, and they're built on defense, and they're built on getting the key hit when you need it the most. And this team, they've shown they have the pitching, and they've shown that they can play defense. I know there's some guys who their defensive numbers don't look that good, but I do believe this is a very sound defensive team overall. But the situational hitting, again, is just, I don't know what the solve for it is at this point.
Well, here's why I have just a glimmer of optimism today when it comes to the San Francisco Giants. And I know that's not very popular to say after, of course, getting blanked 4-0.
How dare you be optimistic after a loss?
But, Sammy, I don't think anybody hits anymore. I mean, you talked about the San Diego Padres, the team they're trailing and they're chasing, a game and a half back. Guess who has a worse offense than the Giants, believe it or not, in every metric? That would be the San Diego Padres.
Baseball's a weird game that way.
They can't hit either. I would say that everybody now in Major League Baseball is predicated on pitching and defense. Even the Dodgers, as good as they are offensively, when they lost 7 in a row, go look at the offensive numbers with Freddie Freeman. Mookie Betts was terrible, and they struggle offensively. We have become so pitching dominant in Major League Baseball, the Yankees can't hit anymore. The Yankees have no – and I don't know
well,
if it's –
well, they've been in a massive slump for the last month plus. That's how the Blue Jays have been able to catch them.
And I don't know if it's necessarily that they can't hit anymore, or it's just sort of an indictment of baseball overall that the steroid era is over. That baseball being played today is very different than the way it was played 10 years ago. And so, while, yeah, the Giants, with all that being said, are still really putrid when it comes to making contact and driving in runs – but I'm still optimistic that the pitching, albeit Verlander struggled, but the bullpen, there is some optimism, what we saw, you know, last night. And San Francisco has to keep in mind that nobody hits anymore right now. Now, obviously, they got to get better than what it is that they've been doing. But the Giants, still, you would think, Elliot Ramos with a couple of hits last night, that was good to see. That Devers is going to be Devers. And if the pitching can be what it is that it's been in the first part of the season, that there is a reason to still believe that this Giant team can crack the postseason.
I agree with that, too. As you said, I believe they do have the ingredients. And again, I do believe this team right now, I think this is still like an 85-86 win team. You got Logan Webb on the hill tonight. That's why I'm wearing my Logan Webb basketball jersey. I'll show it off to everyone on YouTube. Shout out to those watching on YouTube, by the way, brought to you by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer. We are coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios. Laughing Monk, righteously brewed right here in San Francisco. And I'm curious how many Giants fans out there are still believing in this team as a playoff contender like Dan is. I'm there as well. Again, 888-957-9570. That is the number you can call or text us on the Boxer and Gerson Work Injury Attorneys text line. All right, paid the bills off with the sponsors. I agree. 85-86 win team. That'll get you in the mix for that sixth wild card spot. Absolutely. And that's before you factor in what the Giants will do at the trade deadline. And the closer we get to that deadline, Dan, the more and more important that day is going to get for this team, because there are clear needs this team has. Or let me rephrase that. This team does have needs. What those needs are, I think, is clear, but not super clear. And how important addressing those needs are, though, I think is very much up in the air. When I look at this team, I see three major needs. And they're not groundbreaking. Oh, my God, that's a great call. And these are very simple needs I think a lot of teams have. They need a bat, another bat in this lineup. Crazy enough to say, even though they did add Rafael Devers. Where that bat goes in the lineup, I'm not quite sure. What position you try to upgrade, I'm not quite sure. Do you try and find another outfielder maybe to create less time for Mike Yastrzemski? Do you try and find another center fielder to play alongside Jung-Hoo Lee in the second half? Or are you looking for someone who you feel more consistent at first base, since I don't feel comfortable putting Rafi Devers at first? Do you look for a better second baseman if Casey Schmidt doesn't hit? Or are you looking behind the plate? Again, Patrick Bailey could be taking that lead off the table the way he's hitting this month. Starting pitching, everyone needs starting pitching. I looked through some names last night. We can get into those later on. And then, of course, there's bullpen help. Another thing that everyone in the league needs. Eric Miller, he's out for the count right now. Left elbow sprain. I heard Buster Posey the other day. He believes that they caught it early enough that Eric Miller won't need a substantial IL stint, or the dreaded TJ word. I don't want to say it, just out for bad luck.
He's already started his rehab.
Okay, well, that's good. So that's a good sign there. But when you see UCL, when you see elbow sprain in a pitcher, it's hard not to go to the worst case scenario. So all in all, Patrick Bailey could take away the catcher need. They brought in a guy last night, Matt Gage, who had a pretty good debut for the Giants. He's a lefty, lefty journeyman out of the minor league, spent some time in Toronto and Detroit, originally drafted by the Giants, actually. And he wears the number 93. My guess is because that's the year he was born, February of 93. I'm looking at his page right now. And his baseball ref, his Fangraphs page, actually, as I'm looking at, this might be a bad sign. Matt Gage, the little, you know, they have the little picture of every player on their stats pages. They got Matt Gage wearing a Dodger hat on his Fangraph page for the Giants. So that might not be a good omen there. I'm being dead serious there, Fitz. He has got a Dodger. I'm looking at it right now. So can Matt Gage take the need for a lefty reliever off the table for the Giants? Can Patrick Bailey take the need for a hitting catcher off the table for the Giants? And that would allow them to focus their efforts purely on the starting pitching front. And that kind of leads us into our favorite conversation we seem to have on this show, Dan, you and I. It's time for everyone's favorite game. What do you do with Justin Verlander? Yay! Ba-ba-ba-da-ba. But again, it seems every week we're asking this exact same question. Another rough night from Verlander last night. Gives up 4 runs, 2 2/3 innings. And Dan, this is the guy who last week he said he was throwing stuff at the wall. He had an entire all-star break to throw more stuff at the wall. The problem is he's throwing stuff on the wall, but the stuff he's throwing at the wall is getting hit back right at him. So it's not really working there. It's just, I can't even ask the question what you do with him as I ask that question, because it's just we're spinning in circles at this point.
Well, he has to stay as a starter because you don't have anybody at this point to replace him unless you're going to go get a pitcher at the deadline. So he's going to get a couple of more starts. As far as what it is that they do at the vaunted deadline, I don't know if I'm addressing hitting as much as pitching. Now, I know the pitching's been good, but at some point, I do think that you have to go a little bit deeper. And we're, you know, the innings amassed by that of Logan Webb and Robbie Ray are amongst the most in Major League Baseball. I want to see the top 10. So, and knock on wood, this ever happens, but if they miss a start or if these guys, you know, if these guys get hurt, where are the Giants then? San Francisco, I do think, and it's been, Landon Roop's been really good. We'll see where, you know, things are going with Birdsong. But this is a team that clearly, to me, at this juncture, needs a veteran starter. To me, that's where the crosshairs are at. It's not necessarily first base. It's not second. I like Casey Schmidt. There's not a position. Yeah, you can improve, but I'm okay with that. Because, again, I think in today's baseball, you just need to hit enough. You need to go out and get a veteran pitcher to bolster that staff and to keep your eye on the postseason. And if there's somebody that you can get, I don't know, where's Aroldis Chapman? He's in Boston. Granted, you need a left-handed reliever. And now Boston's beginning Steven to win. That's the hottest team in baseball, so you're not getting anybody from Boston anymore. But to me, that's what it is that I'm doing at the deadline, is that I need pitching help.
I agree with that, because when you look at the other options is you bring up a good point. If you're not going to go with Verlander, then who? I think if you want to go internally, my first thought is a guy who pitched pretty well last night, Tristan Beck, who went 4 1/3 innings, gave up one hit. I think he retired the first 12-13 batters that he faced last night. He really settled things down for the Giants. And, you know, Fleming and Javier Lopez, they were talking about in that third inning, this was a horrible start for the Giants on this road trip. And in the second half, when you see Verlander get lit up that early and you got to go to your bullpen right away, you're thinking first game, again, granted, it's a 6-game road trip and you do have an off day between your Wednesday game in Atlanta and your Friday night game against New York this next upcoming week. But credit to Tristan Beck, who gobbled up a lot of innings last night and really did a great job preserving that bullpen. I don't think he's a starter per se, but if you want to find just a temporary stopgap option, why not try Tristan Beck out for a couple starts or two, see if he can give you 3-4 innings to start the game. Granted, that's not a full start. You probably want a little bit more from your starter. It's not ideal, but I would rather have Tristan Beck go out and get me 3-4 solid innings rather than see what Justin Verlander can do right now.
I would say to that, that we're regressing back to Farhan and the openers.
I know, exactly.
And I think that you need a starter. So if it's not Beck, go get a veteran who can give you not two or three innings, but maybe five or six. Although he was really good last night, and he's really good, hopefully, in that role. The question just becomes, who is the veteran pitcher that you can go out and sort of put at the back end of that rotation? Again, we're hoping that nothing happens to Logan Webb and Robbie Ray, but...
Oh, well, then everything's screwed.
I mean, again, when I look, I don't know if you can bring this up, Poss, in terms of innings, these two have as many innings as anybody in baseball, so they've amassed a lot, and the wear and tear, and it's just, look, it's pitching. At some point, you might miss a start, you may go down with a subtle injury, so San Francisco has to be prepared. To me, my focus, again, is on pitching, and it's starting pitching and then finding somebody who's a left-handed arm that can replace Eric Miller, who's going to be gone for another month.
Logan Webb is second in Major League Baseball in innings with 125 and two-thirds, and Robbie Ray is ninth with 119.
That's a lot.
Webb again, yeah, that 125, second in baseball, first in the National League. So, yeah, they're gobbling innings up. Landon Roop, he's at 96 innings for the year, and I believe his professional career high is around 100 innings, so he's about to hit... I don't want to say an innings cap because that implies that they're going to want to roll him back at some point, but he's about to blow through a career high in innings. He's going to be in uncharted territory. And then you got Hayden Birdsong. He's at 65 innings on the year. Again, I believe his career high professionally is also around that 100, 110 range. And he is fighting his own command battle right now. He's going to be the fifth starter coming out of the break here, so he's going to be pitching in that Tuesday night game in Atlanta. That'll be his first chance to get back on the mound and try and right the ship on his season, because we've seen how good Birdsong can be. Dan, you've spoken very glowingly about him. You liked him a lot more than Kyle Harrison back when we had those two pitchers to compare there. So I don't know what you're getting out of him. Landon Roop, I think he's a mystery. And again, we're talking about internal options here. I'll get to some external options in a minute. But you look at your minor league options. Carson Seymour, he's pitching pretty well, 4-8 with a 3.86 ERA. I know that record isn't very good. The ERA does look a little bit better.
I want the other Carson.
Well, which one? There's Carson Ragsdale and there's Carson Wisenhunt.
I'm going Wisenhunt if somebody's coming up.
Who's 8-5, but he's got a 4.50 ERA over 94 innings, giving up 97 hits in that time. He has got 82 strikeouts to 28 walks, though, so his command's pretty good. But opposing teams are hitting 272 against him. That's in the pitching-friendly PCL. I mean, again, any of those guys you go to, well, you can go to Carson Ragsdale, who's sporting a 5.18 ERA down in AAA.
But I think Wisenhunt is sort of their
coveted
prospect.
Yeah, but either way, you're still putting a rookie in a position where you need a veteran starter. So I did a little bit of a dive last night. I looked around kind of the options the Giants could go to on the starting pitching market, and I don't think they're going for any of the big names, the top-shelf guys. I look at guys who, again, you could plug into that 3-4 spot in the rotation. Maybe they're your 4 starter in your playoff rotation. The list isn't insane, but there are some names on there. Seth Lugo with the Kansas City Royals and Michael Lorenzen also with the Royals. Those are guys who... have an okay year. Seth Lugo's got a 2.67 ERA this year so far in 101 innings. He had a great year last year with the Royals. He could be a guy, but again, that could be a tough one to get. I don't know how much you're willing to part with to bring in a guy like that. Michael Lorenzen, you probably get him a little bit cheaper. He's probably more a stereotypical 4th or 5th starter for this Giants team. I remember he was one of the big acquisitions a couple years ago at the deadline in 2023. The Phillies got him. He ended up throwing a no-hitter that year after the Phillies got him, but he didn't really do anything else much after that. And he was a guy I kind of wanted the Giants to look into in 2023. He could be an option this year. Another Kansas City Royal, I guess we're just going to raid the Royals, is Michael Wacha. We all remember him. Wacha Wacha gave up that home run to Travis Ishikawa in 2014 for the Giants to clinch the pennant. He is 4-9 this year, getting terrible run support. I mean, you think that Justin Verlander gets bad run support. Michael Wacha's gotten even worse run support and more innings, still sporting a 3.74 ERA. These are, again, solid mid to back end of the rotation options that the Giants could be looking into that you might not have to break the prospect bank open for in order to get. The only downside, though, Dan, is that there are so many teams in playoff contention right now. There are so many teams that are a hot week away from getting into playoff contention that
everyone and their brother is going to be banging down the door on some of these seller teams trying to get these starting pitchers. The competition to get these guys is going to be so fierce.
And bullpen help. That's what every team that is contending is looking at, starting pitching and bullpen, and not necessarily in that order, which is why, while San Francisco has some needs with the injury to Miller is untimely, I don't think they're in as desperate a situation as a lot of other teams in Major League Baseball. San Francisco does need somebody in the back end of that rotation. There's a list of names, but I do think that San Francisco is going to make a move. And if we've learned nothing else from that of Buster Posey, is that he's aggressive, and I like that mm-hmm. about him.
Yeah.
And if he's going to pull the trigger on Rafi Devers in June, I'm willing to bet that when it comes to the trade deadline, he's going to make this team better. Now, who is it that he's going to give up? I think also sort of lends to an interesting conversation. I don't think that Luciano as well as Matos are long for the San Francisco Giants. And I wouldn't be surprised, depending on who it is that they get back, if those two guys are gone at the deadline, if not both, one or the other. And the reason why I say that, Sammy, is that they're both out of options. And that's something you have to take into account, which means that next year, Matos and Luciano, if they're not with the parent club, you got to trade them. So you may as well do it now. I don't know what you're going to get in return for either one of those guys, but to me, they become trade commodities now more than ever.
I totally agree with you. I think when Marco Luciano came back this year, he's kind of, here's this guy's name, I'm 20 minutes back from my vacation, I'm going to bring it up, Jonathan Kuminga. There is a Kuminga quality to Marco Luciano, and it feels like his entire journey with this team has just been so mismanaged. I do believe that the Giants under Farhan Zaidi absolutely botched the final stages of Marco Luciano's development. They tried to shove him into the shortstop position that he was not ready for, and they tried to set him up for opportunities and then took those opportunities away from him before he could utilize them. Case in point, I look at what happened last year when they traded away Jorge Soler to open up DH at-bats for him, but then immediately jammed Gerard Encarnacion in the DH spot. They clearly had no idea what they wanted to do with Marco Luciano. He suffered for it. This year, he's hitting pretty well. He's got 19 home runs and 227 down in Sacramento right now. Striking out still a little too much for my liking, but he is your best trade chip right now.
He's 23.
And there is a lot of growing room for him. There is still a lot that whatever team that acquires him can work with and utilize to turn him into a good baseball player. The problem is you're going to be trading him when his value is, I think, not as high as it could have been. You're not selling low, but you're not selling high either. And so you're probably going to have to include him. You're probably going to have to include Matos. Honestly, you might have to include a Carson Wisenhunt or a Josar DeJesus Gonzalez, who is 17 years old down rookie ball. Hopefully the Giants hold on to him. Johnny Lovell, I'm just looking at the Giants' top prospects right now. You might have to part with one of your top five, six top prospects.
Yeah, I can't do that.
See, there's only one prospect.
After giving up Kyle Harrison, I can't do that again this year.
But see, I don't know if I want to give up a lot of the pitching, but you might not have a choice because, and again, I don't want to play this game of clutching prospects. We did this a couple of years ago when Juan Soto was on the trade market, and there's this whole argument at the station. Would you build a trade package around Kyle Harrison for Juan Soto? And a lot of people at this station, when I say a lot of people, I mean myself and Willard, we were saying, no, you don't do that trade because you need a guy like Kyle Harrison, who at the time was the top-ranked lefty prospect in baseball. We did it the next year when Shohei Ohtani was on the block, and it was, do you build a package around Luciano and Harrison for Shohei? And it was like, no, you don't do that. And by everyone, again, I mean myself and Mark Willard and some other people at the station. The belief at that time was that you don't want to make trades for superstars that aren't going to stick around. This is totally different. I'm not going to be as gung-ho about holding on the prospects, not named Bryce Eldridge, because this team is in a situation where giving up prospect capital to bring in one of those win-now bats makes a little bit more sense than it did back in 22 and 23. So, yeah, I'm not going to be clutching prospects if I'm Buster Posey right now, because I don't think you really need to unless it's Bryce Eldridge.
Well, there's prospects and there's prospects. So, would you give up Bryce Eldridge?
that again, like that's probably the only one where I am clutching my pearls there and being like, oh, I can't give up him. He's everything. No, that Bryce Eldridge is my one untouchable. Everybody else, if you want Wisenhunt, if you want Rainer Arias, if you want Mason Black, if you want Iverson Arteaga, if you want any of those guys,
see,
they're on the market.
I've read, and I defer to people that follow these guys, because I don't go to Sacramento unless I'm driving through on my way to Lake Tahoe, but I defer to people that are in the know, and there are three guys that are quote-unquote untouchable. Obviously, Bryce Eldridge. But Carson Wisenhunt, because of this changeup, apparently he has this amazing pitch. They're big on him. Where he's like, untouchable might be a bit strong. If there's a package or a player that can help the Giants right now, I think they would deal him. But I think he's one of those guys that, like, well, there's some other guys. Can we entertain you with somebody else? And then the third guy is Dakota Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the outfielder out of Mississippi State. Shout out Will Clark. We were talking about him before the show.
Yep.
Those are three guys that I just heard. That, listen, there are a lot of players that the Giants can sell right now, or prospects that they can shop. There's three guys that they want to hold on to, and those being the three.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that three here. We can get into that more on the other side. Mitch in New Jersey, I see you on the line. I wonder who Mitch wants the Giants to trade for this week. Mitch in New Jersey, I think he was on the Bo Bichette bandwagon at one point, too. So maybe
2 weeks in a row.
There you go. Okay, so maybe we're going to hear another Bo Bichette. Bo Bichette looking really good for the Blue Jays right now. So we'll get to Mitch on the other side. We're also going to hear from Justin Verlander on the other side, hear what he had to say about his start last night. And then at 10 o'clock, Alex Pavlovich, Giants insider for NBC Sports Bay Area, he was hosting pre- and post-game last night. I believe he is hosting throughout the weekend. He's got his book, The Franchise. We'll ask him about that as well. He'll be joining us at 11 o'clock. So a lot of stuff to get into here, Verlander. And the big question I have for today is, with the second half starting, who has to be the Giants MVP in the second half if they want to make the playoffs? That's the question I have for Giants fans today. 888-957-9570 is the number to call or text on the Boxer and Gerson Work Injury Attorneys text line. More Giants talk and your calls coming up, brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good.
Gucci!
Now back to the Orange and Black Weekend Wrap on 95.7 The Game.
Stop striking out. You know, advance the runner. You know, gee whiz.
I want Jan to be the Giants' new hitting coach. She knows what's up.
Oh, who cares?
Do we have any Coldplay songs we can do any rejoins with? I saw that story this last week. I was on vacation this last week, Dan. Figure, you know, all-star break, not a whole lot going on. And that could be generally a difficult week for radio content wise. And I said, screw it. I don't want to deal with that. I'm going on vacation. I'll let Steven Rizzotto produce the morning roast.
Yay!
For a week when there's no content to deal with whatsoever. And we set some stuff up so he wasn't completely without content, but yeah, no, I
tell the people where you were.
So I went to my usual retreat up in Point Reyes, up in Inverness, along Tomales Bay. So got some nice peace and quiet there. Exactly. A lot of cricket noises up there, a lot of bay noises. Did some hiking, did some kayaking, stuff like that. Just, you got to unplug every now and then. Didn't do a whole lot of drinking.
Decompress?
Decompress a little bit. Just when you wake up as early as I do every day and you deal with the loudness that is Joe Shasky every day, your life gets very chaotic very fast on a week-to-week basis. And sometimes you just need a week to just, you know, just let loose and just distract, you know, distance yourself from everything. My mom texted me on Wednesday, hey, did you guys see you had Marlins Man on that this morning? I was like, no, I didn't. Because, Dan, I make a rule that when I'm not in, I don't wake up until at least 9:55, because that's when the morning roast ends. I completely unplug. I have no idea what happened on my show when I'm not in, and I don't really want to know. It's not my concern. I'm on vacation. I'm checked out. I'm decompressing from it all.
And that's what life's about.
Exactly.
What about the All-Star game?
I did watch the All-Star game. So the way the house that my family has up on the bay is set up, it's right along the water, and, you know, we got some docks in the water and stuff like that. And I'm watching on my laptop because we don't have a TV there, so you have to use the Wi-Fi, the spotty Wi-Fi up there to watch the game. And yeah, you know, I watched the All-Star game on my laptop in our house up there. Mm. And around mid-game, I'm like, the tide's in right now. The water's not that bad. And this game is so-so right now. I think National League was up 2-0 at the time.
So around the fifth inning or so, I was like, you know what? Screw it. I did what you like to do. I took a dip in the bay. So yeah, I did some. And so I had my Bluetooth speaker and my phone. I just put the game on my speaker and was just blasting it out over the little area that we have to swim in. And yeah, just kind of swimming around the bay while I watched Pete Alonso hit a 3-run bomb. And yeah, that's how I enjoyed my All-Star game. Just swimming around in Tomales Bay at 6 in the evening. And yeah, the water was kind of cold and foggy out, but the water was surprisingly warm, as it usually kind of is.
Do you know
there,
a temperature by chance?
No, probably in like the 70s. Water temperature. Wow. It was cold. It was warmer in the water than in the air. So it's like I'm sitting there thinking, should I go swimming? It's not going to be that cold. It's going to be that cold when I get out. Hey, you know what? Screw it. Yeah, so you know, went swimming.
Far cry from the mid 50s here in the San Francisco Bay. I have a friend who is trying to recruit me to Running Man and has been for years.
That doesn't sound like fun at all.
No, but he's one of those. It's just like, oh, come on, you just sleep one with nature. It's just kind of a rave. And I'm like, first of all, I'm too old for that.
Wait, so it's called Running Man, but
I'm not Burning Man.
Oh, Burning Man. Okay. Yeah, Running Man sounds like no
dance.
Fun. Yeah, Running Man sounds no fun at all. I don't want to do anything with running. Burning Man, yeah, I'd definitely be into that.
Have you been?
I have not. I have a friend who's been, and the number one thing I hear is that getting in and out of Burning Man.
Oh, yeah, because it's always in these remote locations.
Yeah, it's an absolute nightmare getting in and out. You have people running out of gas on the way in and stuff like that. I would always like to do Burning Man. I just don't want to plan it. If someone's going, it's like, hey, we have an extra spot, come with. Yeah, I'm all in. But that just sounds like a nightmare event to play.
It originated here in San Francisco. I want to say out of Baker's Beach.
That sounds about right.
Was the first Burning Man. I just told him, hey, listen, man, I need indoor-outdoor plumbing at this point, man. I'm not sleeping one with the stars. That's just not me.
Your camping days are over.
Yeah, no, I never was a big... You seem like someone who could be one with nature and survive off the land.
Yeah, no, I got my wilderness survival merit badge.
I need room service.
Yeah. No, well, I was
let's go cover it.
I was an Eagle Scout, so I got all that stuff out pretty early on. I am an Eagle Scout. I still am. It's not something they take away from you. But yeah, so in Boy Scout, I got a lot of my camping done. I'm still down for it every now and then. It's just, again, it is the planning of it. Planning a camping trip a couple of years ago, a girl who I was with, I was dating at the time, we took a camping trip down to...
Shout out Allie.
Not Allie, it was one before Allie.
Sorry.
This one, her name was Stephanie. We did a camping trip down in Death Valley for my birthday in December, which is the best time to go to Death Valley, by the way, because it's, you know, not 130 degrees. And the planning for that trip, because you got to have everything that you need on you, obviously, because you're such a remote place out there in the desert. If you forgot something, you're screwed.
I mean, bring it on, man.
And exactly, Jan. Planning that trip was not fun. It was stressful putting everything together because I could be a very regimented planner. She was not a regimented planner. It was not fun planning for that trip. Once the trip was on, though, it was a fun trip. But making it happen, very, very frustrating.
You strike me as a very type A sort of person.
Well, because I've been camping so much that I know
that
if you forget something, it's going
to
ruin your trip. Like, you literally got to bring everything out there. So being prepared, so I get very, very anal about that.
Oh, understood. I have a sort of unrelated, but I have a friend who has a startup that's quite successful. Well, it's gaining traction. And what they did is they created a very state-of-the-art modern porta potty.
Ooh.
So when you think of the porta potties at Burning Man or just your typical porta potties at a sort of big sporting event, those things are always dreadful, right? Especially for women. And they've created this porta potty. They just got the Los Angeles contract for that at the upcoming Olympics and World Cup. So shout out to them. I don't know how we went down this hole. Speaking of the All-Star game, if we can just take sort of a little side route here, but your thoughts on the swing off and... Of course, you knew at least one San Francisco Giant pitcher was going to give up a home run.
Yeah, no, as is tradition, you have... Listen, Logan Webb, he had a nice, clean, boring third inning. I think he threw 11 pitches, and they swung at all of them. But there was one point where Dave Roberts came out with two outs to... I thought he was going to make a pitching change, and I was going to be livid. Like, are you kidding me? A Dodger manager is going to take a Giant pitcher out? What are we doing here? He wanted to give Freddie Freeman his due as he took him off the field for Matt Olson, so I was okay with that. Glad Logan got to do his full inning. Glad it went off without any issue. Yeah, Randy Rodriguez, you are officially a San Francisco Giants all-star pitcher. Right up there with Stu Miller, right up there with Atlee Hammaker, right up there with Rick Rushel, right up there with Tim Lincecum, right up there with Johnny Cueto, right up there with Will Smith, right up there with Logan Webb last year. It is a proud tradition, Dan, of San Francisco Giants pitchers taking them out in the Midsummer Classic and just
poo in the bed all over themselves.
Rites of passage.
It is. It's so glad that Randy Rodriguez was able to have that moment. And, man, that was a bomb that Brent Rooker
hit
off.
What are the two things he does not do this year? Give up home runs and walk people.
And he did all. Well, so he came in the perfect situation. Yeah, that's what his thing is. He comes in this year in high leverage situations with guys on base. He came in the exact moment that has made him an all-star this year. Yeah. And it all just fell apart, which just goes to show baseball could be a very nutty game. You are going against the best of the best. I really just hope that moment doesn't screw him up, because we all remember, I don't remember, I wasn't there, obviously, because I wasn't alive, but Atlee Hammaker was just never the same after the Freddie Lynn Grand Slam. And so hopefully it's not something like that where it kind of lingers over him. And because Randy Rodriguez has been nails, obviously, for the Giants out of the bullpen. You know, it's not hyperbole to say this, Dan. This is a just provable statistical fact. Randy Rodriguez had the best first half by a Giants reliever ever. In the entire 140-plus year history of Giants baseball, going back to the 1800s, well, I guess going back to 1912 when earned runs became an official stat, no Giants pitcher has had a first half like Randy Rodriguez. And they need him to kind of keep that going in the second half if they're going to succeed and find the play.
What did you think of the swing off?
I thought it worked for the event. I don't need to see the All-Star game go deep in the night with extra innings. I don't need to see a tie where Bud Selig is going, oh, I don't know what to do at the end. So you had an exit strategy. My issue, though, is that
I forgot all about that.
Yeah.
I said, what the hell are they doing?
I remember it every year.
No, I forgot that the swing-off was going to decide extra innings.
Oh, I didn't even know the swing-off was happening until in the ninth inning.
Exactly.
When the Joe Davis said on the broadcast, there will not be extra innings. We're going to have a swing-off. And I was like, okay, I'm down with it. It's an exhibition game. And that's the thing. All-Star game, it is an exhibition game. It does not matter. The stats are not real. So you could do fun, stupid stuff like this. I'm cool with that. And I had no problem with the actual swing-off. The issue I had, it's like, on a night when Major League Baseball is supposed to use the All-Star game to showcase its greatest talent, it's all about putting the stars, the biggest stars on there. That's why Fernando Tatis Jr. is in the All-Star game and not Elliot Ramos. People want to see Tatis Jr. They don't want to see Elliot Ramos. That's why Jacob Mizorowski was in the All-Star game, because this is this new, exciting, electric pitcher. We need to show him off, and he pitched a hell of an eighth inning and showed why he was on that roster. So when the whole name of the game is, what can we do to showcase baseball's best talent? When you have the big swing-off come, let's have Kyle Stowers and Jose Aranda up there swinging. We don't not Shohei Ohtani or Aaron Judge, because they have left the building already, which, you know, who would have bet that was going to happen? Shohei betting on games. But that, I had issue with that. I had issue with the fact that we had a bunch of, I don't want to disrespect these guys, but I mean, Aranda, Stowers, what are we doing here? Kyle Schwarber made sense. Yeah. Pete Alonso made sense. Who are the other guys that went for the American League? I can't even remember.
I can't even remember either. I got to double check on that.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, whatever. The National League won, which I'm happy for. I'm a fan of National League baseball. Could that ever come? Would you ever want to see a swing off determined a regular season game?
I got to be honest with you. It sounded hokey, but it worked. It worked. So, I don't know. Probably not. But there was, I was captivated. And I think Major League Baseball did a good job. I'm sort of going back and forth with, for an All-Star game, it's perfect. But I'm curious your thoughts on miking up players during games.
See, I feel like for some guys, it makes sense. Like, if you want to mic up the shortstop or the outfielder, that makes sense.
Really?
But in the first inning, yeah. Because, I mean, we've seen it in national TV games, too. I think they mic'd up Willie Adames during that Sunday night game for the Giants and the Dodgers. Yeah. That's fine because, like, especially if you're an outfielder, I hate saying this because I don't want to diminish what baseball players do, but if you're like a left fielder, for example, most plays you're not really doing anything. You know, if there's a ground ball to first base, left fielders, you're chilling. And I remember a couple years ago, they mic'd up Julio Rodriguez in the outfield for the All-Star game, and there's a ball hit to him. He's like, oh, I gotta go catch this, and he catches it. You hear him, you know, the rustling of his jersey and chains or whatever. I don't think it's that much of an issue when it's an outfielder. What I thought was weird was having Skubal and Cal Raleigh mic'd up in the first inning.
Yeah, that didn't work.
Rizzo, you've pitched before. I feel like pitching with an earpiece in your ear
and talking as part of a broadcast while you're also trying to focus on pitching against the best baseball players on the planet, that just seems like it would be very, very distracting. Yeah, again, you've been a pitcher. Do you think you could talk to someone on the phone while also pitching and still focus?
I think I could do it, but that's just me. But I the thing that gets me uncomfortable the most is talking to them while he's getting in the stretch, while he's coming set on the mound. And it's just like, if you're going to have a pitcher and a catcher mic'd up, you have to get complete buy-in. You have to get complete buy-in. And if I'm Tarik Skubal and I'm on the mound and I got guys on base and I'm realizing midway through my inning that this was a bad idea, then I probably never want to do it again. And the thing is, just don't talk to them. Just don't let them pitch, let them catch. Maybe there's an incentive. Okay, I'm wearing a microphone, so let's be more verbal than normal. And maybe Skubal could say, okay, I'm going to go fastball here. And then Cal Riley, maybe they could communicate. But I don't need John Smoltz in their ear talking.
Smoltzy was talking to Kershaw as Kershaw was delivering the pitch. And Kershaw, he says, throw the cutter. Kershaw is releasing the ball and says, Smoltzy, I don't throw that pitch. And he struck somebody literally while he's throwing the pitch. He's having a conversation
with
Smoltzy.
That's just stupid impressive there from Kershaw.
And Kershaw had complete buy-in. So, yeah. Like, that's where I'm fine with it. But if you're going with a guy who, like, oh, yeah, I'll wear it. No, it's got to be somebody that's like, yeah, let's do it. I'm wearing this microphone.
The part I didn't get is, again, Cal Raleigh's in the squat there. And Joe Davis is like, Cal Tarik, we're just going to let you take this away. All right, go. We'll talk to each other. What are you guys going to do here? I'm thinking, so what's Cal Raleigh going to do? Like, hey, Tarik, throw a fastball here. Like, Shohei Ohtani standing right there. Like, if he says, all right, Tarik, throw fastball, he's going to hear it. Yeah. So I just, that part didn't make sense to me either. Kershaw, I think it's a good point you make about the buy-in there, Steven. Kershaw bought in. He was clearly having fun with it. With Tarik Skubal and Cal Raleigh, it felt very awkward and forced. You don't need to mic up pitchers. You don't need to mic up catchers. Mic up the shortstop. Mic up the first baseman. Mic up the outfielder. I'm fine with that.
Well, I think it's fine for an all-star game, right? It's fun. It's innovative. And you see if it works. And it's an exhibition game at the end of the day. I have an issue when you're talking to players during the regular season. And this is what I think is going to be the end of miking up live players. It's going to happen. Somebody is going to commit a crucial error because their attention is divided. When you're talking to Willy Adames in the middle of a game against the Los Angeles Dodgers, are you kidding me? And there are still zeros on the board. There's going to be an error that is committed, and that is going to be the end of that.
Oh, well, that'll be a fun one because the easy answer will be, oh, I had the announcer in my ear. That's why I screwed up. I'm kind of curious, like, how acceptable of an excuse is that going to be as well? Because you've seen guys catch balls with the announcer in their ear all the time, and they don't drop it. So the first time it does happen, I think it's going to be more like, guys have shown they can handle this. Why can't you handle it? So it'll be interesting to see how much.
I think the optics are going to be so bad that it's going to reflect poorly on the network. Even if it's not the player's fault, the manager's going to be like, take that mic and shove it you know where.
Exactly. The minute it becomes a distraction, though, to your point, yes. I think at the end of the day, yeah, it's all fun and games until it's not. One guy I want to hear mic'd up, though, more than anything, is Mitch in New Jersey because he's got some trade ideas, and I'm kind of curious what Mitch thought of how the All-Star game went. Mitch, I want your All-Star games first, and then we can talk about who you want to trade for. Give me your thoughts on the All-Star game. You're on the wrap.
How you guys doing? I'm Dan Stanplay. You had a good vacation?
Oh, thank you very much, Mitch.
I agree. Is a police officer goes on vacation, he's not watching Adam 12 to brush it up and keep fresh. You know, you just forget. That's a good rule to live by. I should have taken that to heart 37 years at FedEx. But I like the angle when they have the camera with the pitch coming in. I would love to see that ball coming in. You know, it's coming in wicked fast. Yeah, less than a half a second. You have to really focus talking about the audience. Or how about this? They haven't tried this. How about put it on a base deal? How about on the runners? Talking about that's a distraction too. I mean, is he running and he's thinking he's going to take, tag off and stuff like that, or the hit and run? It's going to be ridiculous. These announcers think it's about them. It's about the players. And we want to get into this. Maybe we should have these postseason and the All-Star game have their statistics count. Will we get a better effort? Also, the home runs in the home run derby, they should count towards the season, But I'm just getting ridiculous and being facetious here. Anyway, I know, look, should I be talking too much? Do I have to kidnap Bobby Witt Jr.? Back to Josh Naylor. But I got three other guys. Singer from Cincinnati, he's a good pitcher. And then there's three guys in Kansas City. I know they can't sign them all. I mean, Indiana won't cost a lot. But they have these two young big fellas, Pascadino and Caglione. I know he's a rookie. They're not going to trade him.
Mitch, you're not getting any of their. You're not getting any of their rookies.
That's he's just, an Italian.
Let's. We're not getting those guys there. I love that energy there, but I don't think you're getting there. Brady Singer. That's an interesting option from Cincinnati. The only problem is, I think Cincinnati fashions themselves too much of a contender to be sellers.
They're above 500. Well, Kansas City. I figure they'd be getting a run for Detroit, but Detroit's the only team in above 500. But this is definitely another pitcher, and maybe you can dangle Justin Verlander. He's playing like a JV, but he's a Hall of Famer.
He is a JV.
If the other four guys are doing better, you have nothing to lose by pitching Justin every five games.
Awesome. Thanks a lot for the call there, Mitch. A lot to unpack from Mitch's call. Did you say we should go kidnap Bobby Witt Jr.?
Do we really need to unpack Mitch from Jersey?
That was... Well, it was like, I got to go Nicolas Cage. I have to steal the Bobby Witt Jr. That's the only option I have. That's the only way to get the Giants in the playoffs. We're going to follow the clues and steal Bobby Witt Jr. Wow. He did have some, Justin Verlander, JV. I like that he's JV because those are his initials. Getting back onto the conversation from last night, because, again, it's, like I said, it's our favorite weekly dilemma. You know, let's bang our heads on the wall and ask the exact same question about Justin Verlander. And that's what he was doing this week. And again, he had an entire week to figure himself out and throw more bleep against the wall and see what would work. And clearly, whatever he worked on over the break did not translate. And Dan, it's getting to a point where, you know, you come up with all of these excuses for Justin Verlander. He's been screwed by the offense. He's been screwed by the bullpen. And those things are true. But if you look at just how he's pitched, let's say you give him a couple of those starts where he got screwed over by the offense. Give him a couple more runs to support in those games. Then he had a couple of games where, I remember, there was the Angels game and the White Sox game. Ryan Walker kind of came in. He came in and he blew it. If you give him those runs and take away those blown saves, Justin Verlander is probably 4-6 right now. But he's still got a 4.99 ERA. He's still got a FIP that's right around that same area. FIP, of course, being, of course, a very good predictive stat there, along with, you know, ERA. His FIP is 4.24, which is, you know, a little bit lower than his ERA, but still not very good. You could say that he's had bad BABIP luck. I disagree with that because I don't think the BABIP is that high enough to suggest that he's had bad luck. Justin Verlander has earned that 4.99 ERA that he has this year, and maybe the bad luck or any luck he might have might just be keeping him from being a 5-plus ERA pitcher rather than a sub-5 ERA. But it's hard for me to look at what Justin Verlander has done this year and say, like, yeah, he's had some good starts. He's had some moments of bad luck. But overall, he has been a net loss for the Giants this year. And it's hard for me to really say at this point that he's pitching better than the numbers. I think he's pitched better than his record, but he's not pitched better than what his ERA would indicate. There are no really advanced side metrics or anything you can look under the hood and say, well, based on this, I actually think he's doing a lot better. And the reason I say this is because two of his bread and butter pitches when he was in his prime, Dan, just a couple years ago, the fastball and the curveball, he's still hitting 95 with that fastball, which shows the stuff is still there. But guys are hitting it. You look last night, he had only two swings and misses on the fastball, and that was until the end. The first 13 swings on the fastball, guys got the bat on it. And you look at his starts before that, his previous start against the Phillies, two swings and misses on the fastball. Game against the A's, two swings and misses on the fastball. You keep going back, guys are not getting fooled by his fastball anymore. And that's why he can't put guys away, and that's why guys are getting these two-strike hits on him, and it's incredibly frustrating and deflating at this point. Factor in the curveball, which is just not the swing and miss pitch that it used to be. Guys are hitting better off of it now than they ever have at any point in his career. This is not a case of Justin Verlander getting screwed over by bad defense or purely by bad run support. This is just a case of a 42-year-old pitcher who I think we're seeing just, his pitches just don't have that life anymore.
And it makes it hard for me to really sit back and bank on a second half resurgence from him.
Yeah, you just need him to be better, obviously. And I still think he's going to get another opportunity because there are no other options at this point. Last night was even more frustrating because his pitches were sort of predictable. And he says the mechanics, especially when it comes to his fastball, he feels as though he's corrected things over the last couple of outings. But it's just pitch location when it comes to Verlander. And I sort of have a bone to pick with Javi Lopez, who I like, and I'm overly critical when it comes to announcers. And Lopez is good, but he felt as though last night it was
almost...
And
you've done some announcing in your career as well, so you got it right.
He was sort of dumbfounded at the fact that the Blue Jays were having such success in hitting Verlander, and he went as far as to say he thought Verlander was tipping off his pitches because typically Toronto's not that aggressive. And he pointed at Tristan Beck. When he came into the game, you could see that the Giants were now going deeper into counts, but they were just teeing off on Verlander. The reason they were teeing off on Verlander, because Verlander, while he had some good location at times, I don't care if it's Will Wagner, who's number 9 in the order, a major league hitter, it's called hanging and banging. If you throw a curveball in somebody's eyes like that, every major leaguer, and I don't mean 85%, 90%, I mean 100% of Major League Baseball hitters are going to turn on that thing. And they're going to hit you for damage. And his pitches, the ones that missed, were right there. And it wasn't as if sometimes you'll be hard luck because you'll make a good pitch and then a hitter will go the other way or will hit a good pitch for a double or a base hit, and you just tip your hat. Those things were on a tee. Like, the pitches that he missed, especially which was the back-breaking two-run double by Wagner, was just cheese, was right there. And again, to Javi Lopez's point, like, I don't necessarily see what it is that you were seeing as far as Verlander tipping pitches. No, those are guys that were just getting after pitches that weren't going anywhere. There was no break.
Yeah. He's behind in the count a lot of these as well, too. You look at the second he had last year. Addison Barger hits behind Addison Barger 1-0 in the count. He has the ball off the glove. Alejandro Kirk, he was also behind in the count. The double down the line by Lo Profido, down 1-0 in the count. The Will Wagner, down 1-0. Nathan Lukes, he finally gets a head on someone, but then he hangs a curveball in the middle because he can't, you know, Lukes, he fouled off. He fouled off two or three straight fastballs because he can't get that fastball by guys. Has to go the curveball, which then gets, you know, roped up the middle for a base hit, and things keep going there. So it's just when you look at what you're seeing on the screen, Dan, I think Instant One in YouTube had it here. Just use the eye test. Even games where there was no run support or infield errors, he always seems to allow hard contact. And that's the rub with Justin Verlander. At the end of the day, he has no one really to blame but himself. So I'm curious what Alex Pavlovich has to say about this. We'll talk to him on the other side, courtesy of the River Islands guest line. And that is going to be brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good.